Case number 25-7141. Bank Chita Express LLC Appellant versus Total Quality Logistics LLC. Mr. Sochi for the appellant, Mr. Carey for the appellate.
Good morning, Mr. Sochi. You may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. The district court improperly dismissed Pink Cheetah's complaint under Federal Rule Civil Procedure 12B6 by treating FMCSA's November 30, 2023 email as non-binding guidance as a matter of law. Pink Cheetah plausibly alleged that FMCSA issued TQL an individualized compliance order under 49 U.S.C. section 14704A1. The email addressed a specific complaint in TLQ's specific agreement with Pink Cheetah. It identified the challenged language on page 4 of the agreement. It directed TQL to remove that language from any and all broker carrier agreements, and it directed TQL to ensure compliance with federal motor carrier regulations, and it required TQL to provide transaction records to carriers upon request. Your Honor, I forgot to mention that I am requesting 1 minute in rebuttal.
Where is the directive language in that communication?
Yes, Your Honor. In the email, which I don't know exactly where it is in the record, but the email of November 30th, 2023 says, remove the following language from any and all broker carrier agreements, which is located on page 4 of the submitted agreement with Pink Cheetah Express. Language as stated below may be a violation of section 14906. That language reads, broker is not required to disclose its charges to customers, commissions, or brokerage revenue, and carrier waives its right to receive, audit, and or review information and documents to be kept under 49 CFR 371.
Counsel, it seems like the hardest part of that for you is the may be a violation language. Wouldn't an order say is a violation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It says the following language may be a violation of the statute. And just from a practical perspective, order with legal consequences, wouldn't we expect it to say is a violation?
Yes, Your Honor. Oftentimes orders, I mean, that was just a polite way of saying do this, but the language in the specific language in the email, and it's not just that point that I just referenced, it specifically said remove the following language and ensure compliance with the following regulation, which is 371.3, and to provide transaction records to any carrier when requested. Those are direct orders.
Except, Mr. Sochi, the very top line of the email says follow the below guidance. And in our parlance about differentiating something that's a final order from mere guidance, that term is seen as on the non-order side. What's your response to that?
Well, and Your Honor, under Appalachian Power, it shows us that an agency's label is not controlling when the agency has adopted a settled position that regulated parties are expected to follow. Pink Cheetah does not argue that that label is irrelevant. It argues that the label cannot override the email's individualized directives and practical effect.
And is there, I mean, it's odd to me if this is a final determination that the agency doesn't explain why. I mean, the issue that was joined between the parties before us is whether the waiver is lawful or not. And TQL says, oh, sure, we would have to ensure compliance with this, except that you've waived it. And you say, no, we didn't waive it. It's not waivable. And we don't have an adjudication of that here. So that makes me think it's also maybe not final.
Well, Your Honor, Bennett v. Speer talks about what finality is. Under Bennett v. Speer, final agent action requires consummation of the agency's decision-making process and an action that determines rights or obligations or produces legal consequences. Pink Cheetah's application is, well, the email is a consummation because FMCSA allegedly reviewed the specific complaint and agreement. It identified the language it considered problematic, and it issued a corrective instructions rather than merely requesting information or announcing a possible further review. The operative effect of the email directed TQL to remove language from all broker carrier agreements and provide transactional records, thereby requiring changes to its contractual and compliance practices. Therefore, under Bennett v. Speer, it not only was a consummation of the agency's decision, but it provided, gave obligations for TQL to follow. Again, Pink Cheetah is not contending that Bennett automatically established that the email was in order, but it established a functional framework under which the complaint's allegations plausibly showed finality and operative effect.
Counsel, can I ask you about a related issue? And that's that 14704 requires an order of the secretary. This email is sent by a transportation specialist, and the regulations do envision that there would be delegations of authority within the agency.
Yes.
But do you have any indication that transportation specialists generally, or this one, were delegated authority to issue final orders?
Well, Your Honor, as you know, agency authority is commonly exercised through delegation. Pink Cheetah does not contend that every employee has the authority to issue an order. We contend that the sender's authority, any delegation and or supervisory approval are issued that cannot be conclusively resolved from the complaint. And therefore, the district court erred in dismissing the complaint at the pleading stage. The issue of whether this person had the authority to issue this email is something that the district court should have considered at the pleading level and not dismiss this complaint under Rule 12b-6.
Anything? Any questions?
No.
All right. We'll hear from Mr. Curran.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I am Scott Carey from Baker Donaldson, and I represent the defendant, Appalee Total Quality Logistics, that also goes by the initials TQL. I'd like to take a moment as we begin to introduce my co-counsel, Nicole Kuproskova, and also Sam Carey. Your Honors, this case is about whether a routine compliance guidance email from the FMCSA transportation specialist constitutes an enforceable order of the secretary under USC 14704A1. The district court correctly held that it does not. So first and foremost, I would direct your attention to the email itself, because that's the whole crux of this appeal, is whether or not that email of November 30th constitutes an order. And I have it in my hand. It's in the record. It was made a exhibit to the complaint as Exhibit D. It's basically one page. It, as counsel or as the judge pointed out, it did not come from the secretary. It did not come from the FMCSA administrator. It came from Nelson Newcomb, who was listed at the bottom as being a transportation specialist. It went to Amy Unger, and there's nothing in the record as to who exactly Amy Unger is, but the court could take judicial notice by Googling that she was not the CEO. She's not an executive at TQL. She's not general counsel. She's not even a lawyer. And it came on November 30th during lunchtime. And I think the most instructive thing, Your Honor, is just to look at the language itself. First, Judge Garcia, you indicated that it doesn't say that there is a violation of any law here. It simply says that it may be a violation. And I would point out that there is rulemaking going on right now that's been going on since 2000. So we've got 6 years of rulemaking over this particular agency regulation. And one of the issues is whether there can be waivers in a transportation contract between a broker and a motor carrier. That issue has not been settled. So there is no, I'm not aware of any law that says that that's a violation. And if you look at the record, or if you look at the agency regulation that we're talking about, 371.3, it only requires three things. One, that you keep certain records if you're a broker. Two, that you keep them for a certain period of time, 3 years. And fourth, or third, that each party to a broker transaction has the right to review the record. That's it. That's all there is.
As a practical matter, assume for the moment that this was not a final order. To your understanding, what else could Pink Cheetah have done to get the FMCSA to reach a final determination on this?
Well, one, Your Honor, we're confined to the complaint. Because this was a motion to dismiss, it looks like they did try to get a final order. There was some contact. Well, let me back up. First of all, the other thing that I think is significant about this email is it did not go to Pink Cheetah. If you're going to have an order allowing the other party to go ahead and file suit under this statute, you would think that the order allowing that to happen would go to the other side that is going to file suit. So that didn't happen here. So first of all, they didn't even know about this.
Arguments about who the email went to in your brief, I don't remember that.
We didn't raise that, Your Honor, specifically in the brief, but I think it's important, and it was something that I thought of as we were hearing the argument just before us, because clearly there in the order, it's a 10-page order, it came from the FMCSA administrator, and it went to the governor of the state of California.
We don't have any briefing before us about the casual nature of this linked to who it was sent to.
No, just
I don't have anything that could identify the stature or authority of that person.
There is nothing about who Amy Unger is.
And this is on the complaint, so it's on the allegations of the complaint.
They did not raise that in the complaint either.
Right. So we just look at the facts plausibly pleaded in the complaint and the attachment.
Absolutely. But to your point, it is a very casual email.
So you say there's nothing here resolving the issue, but what about the email saying remove the quoted language from all contracts, ensure compliance with the regulations, provide transactional records when requested? That seems like that resolves your issue against you. And so your place to raise the arguments in defense of waivability is here and in the district court. And you chose not to raise that here.
Your Honor, basically the order or the email itself purporting to be an order is no more than, as you pointed out, guidance. And in the parlance of the transportation industry, these waivers are not just in TQL's contracts, but are generally have been in contracts for a long time. So it wasn't something that we felt incumbent upon ourselves to raise. I don't think that's before this court, because they didn't get to the threshold of whether they could even bring this suit to begin with. If you don't have an order, you can't you kind of get around the rulemaking that's here. So you've got an unsettled thing of law.
If we were to hold that it is an order, it's your view that we would have to then remand for the district court to reach the question about whether the waiver was effective?
Yes, we would go through discovery like you would in any case. And frankly, because we're...
What discovery would be needed on that? That seems like a pretty much a facial legal question.
Well, I think there are a number of... again, we're stuck with taking the facts as true in the complaint. I think there are a lot of things that happened and a lot of allegations in the complaint that, frankly, are not true. But because we're here on a motion to dismiss, we have to accept them as being true. So I think we would want to dispel some of those issues, Your Honor. And I think we would also
even
get...
assuming it's true, you could raise a legal question and just say they don't deny that this language was in their contract, right?
Correct. No, we don't deny that.
Why would you need to discover... What other facts would you need if you stand on the validity of that waiver?
That's true.
I guess something that we could reach, but you haven't raised it.
You're correct, Your Honor, because we're standing on simply that this email cannot be an order. And it's an attempt, frankly, to get around, I think, what has been going on for 6 years with the rulemaking. There were over 7,000 comments. The Transportation Intermediaries Association, which represents the brokers, and the American Trucking Association, which is the largest association for motor carriers, they both oppose this on public policy reasons. So we would respectfully request that you can't, the whole reason for this type of private action is to have to try to move it away after deregulation from something that the FMCSA was dealing with, and try not to have a government agency determine the rights and responsibilities between two private parties. But what's happening here, if you put this into context, is they've tried to get this rulemaking done. It's not done. And in order to try to get around this rulemaking, they've come and got a specialist to issue an email that basically says no more than comply with the law and that there's no violations. And if you look at the Bennett v. Spear test, it doesn't meet either prong one or prong two. There was no process here that happened. They said there was
an investigation. Do you agree that Bennett v. Spear is the test that we should be applying?
I'm sorry?
You agree that Bennett v. Spear is the test that we should be applying?
Well, there are any number of tests. You can look at the regular definition, dictionary definition of what an order is. You could look at the APA definition. You could look at...
What's your view about what the correct analysis is? I know you say you win under all of them.
I think we win under all of them. But I think the court, and we have pointed out, and the district court pointed out, the Raylana case that Your Honor authored, and then other cases that are in that line that look at these types of communications and have found, well, the district court found that this was no more than workaday advice. I think that this email and this whole case kind of falls into that. I don't think we want to raise a casual email from a transportation specialist into a federal case that is really trying to create policy. It's not really a dispute between two parties. They're trying to create law here.
Mr. Soji, Mr. Carey, you're far more familiar with this area, clearly, than we are. Can you point us to any examples of an order that was issued by the secretary? Like, is it usually much more formal? Do you know of cases where there's an order?
I mean, the order that comes to mind is the one that was just before, Your Honor. It's 10 pages. It went to, I know that was under a little different context.
Yeah.
It wasn't in this type of situation. But if you do use the Bennett v. Spear test, there's got to be more of a record. There's got to be an opportunity for my client to respond. Here, basically, we got one email. And I think the silence in the complaint, when you ask what more could they do, I think they tried, at least according to the complaint, to go back and clarify that this was an order that they could sue on. And they, at least apparently from the complaint, because there's no other allegation in the complaint, they didn't get that. So one is they should have clarified that this actually was an order. And two, they've been working on rulemaking, and I think that's going to settle the underlying issue of whether a waiver is prohibited or not. As it stands right now, a waiver, respectfully, is not prohibited, and we stand on the waiver.
And the law that you cite for that, that waiver is permissible here, is what?
Is the regulation itself. There's nothing in the regulation that indicates that you can't have two commercial businesses decide that they're going to contract in a certain way, and they decided to contract here. There's no allegation that this was undue influence or duress, or that the contract was not a good contract. And in fact, the loads were all called under this contract, and Pink Cheetah got paid under this contract.
All right, thank you. We'll hear a rebuttal from Mr. Sochi.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address just a couple of points. First, counsel mentioned the time when the email came out and that it was addressed to Amy Unger. It really doesn't matter the time when the order came out or who it went to at TQL. Amy Unger was an employee of TQL at the time. She was the person who was dealing with the FMCSA employee, so it makes sense this order went to her. The order does not necessarily have to go to Pink Cheetah because the order was directed to TQL and told TQL what to do, not necessarily Pink Cheetah. Under Rule 12b-6, which is what we're really talking about here, a plaintiff need only show plausible action. It does not have to show that this email was actually in order. The email actually came out in 2023, which was long before any rulemaking was going on. Council mentioned about rulemaking. The rulemaking going on now has really nothing to do with the underlying case. All of this happened long before the rulemaking started. The issue is whether the district court prematurely dismissed the complaint, and we argue that it did.
In your brief in the district court, you argued that the defendant can't waive a federal regulation in a contract, but you don't cite any legal authority at all for that, and that issue is not one taken up here. Is there any legal authority for the proposition that TQL cannot waive a federal regulation in a contract?
I don't have that information off the top of my head, Your Honor. Counsel mentioned that more of a record would be needed. If more of a record is required, then that's more of a reason to remand this case back to the district court. The district court was entitled to consider the email's text, but it was not entitled to disregard concrete directives while treating its informal features as dispositive.
All right.
Pink Cheetah plausibly alleged that FMCSA reviewed a specific agreement, identified specific conduct, directed TQL to remove language from all comparable agreements, required compliance with 373.3 and required production of transactions. Therefore, we ask the court to reverse and remand, or at least at a minimum, permit Pink Cheetah to amend her complaint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sochi. The case is submitted.
Thank you.